From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today we do our regular update of news and events from Latin America and the Caribbean with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo. Of course, the big story being the coronavirus and what's happening in the region around that.
Well, in Nicaragua, we seem to be having a very special experience in contrast to other countries, because here we've had two cases confirmed, both of them people that contracted the disease elsewhere, one from Panama, returned from Panama with the disease, and one person returned from Colombia with the disease. And they were put into isolation, and they're getting treatment in compliance with the World Health Organization protocols and the Organization of Pan-American Health protocols. And Nicaragua is also the beneficiary of the experience of the health authorities of Taiwan and, to a lesser extent, South Korea, who have had very successful experiences controlling the pandemic in their countries. So, and they also are working very closely with the Cuban authorities, and one of the brigades that Cuba has sent out is currently working here in Nicaragua together with the Nicaraguan health authorities.
Yeah, you know, by comparison, so, I'm looking at this chart here. Colombia thus far, as of the 25th of March in the afternoon in New York, Colombia had 470 confirmed cases. And what was the other place that you mentioned? Was Panama had 443. So.
Yeah, Panama's got 443. So here in the region, in the Central American region, the Central American Integration System, which is a kind of the body that works towards Central American integration, economic and political and trade integration, has been working. And there are various mechanisms set up within CICA, including the Center for Prevention of Natural Disasters, which is what they're classing this pandemic as. So all those mechanisms for preventing natural disasters and coordinating between the countries of the region have all been activated. And as you just said, Panama's got 443 cases. Next in the list of the member countries is the Dominican Republic with 312, then Costa Rica with 177, Honduras has got 36, Guatemala 21, El Salvador 9, and Nicaragua 2, and then Little Belize with a population of about 600,000 has one case. And of course, it's worth remembering that Nicaragua's population is only about 6.5 million, maybe a little more. So I mean, it's a very small country, but you'd expect that a country that's extremely impoverished like Nicaragua would be quite vulnerable to the virus. But I think we have to look at, and I think what we're going to be able to look back on and we'll be able to comment on as the crisis develops, is that socialist-inspired and oriented countries do much better controlling the outbreak of this COVID-19 virus than countries that follow a free market, capitalist, capitalist model. And so what you're finding is that despite the fact that Venezuela has been subject to really drastic sanctions that have affected its national life, its national economy, its ability to trade in many, many, multiple ways. And probably as a result of those sanctions, I saw a figure the other day, somebody said that there probably 100,000 people had died as a result of the sanctions for one reason or another. But even in Venezuela, and if you compare Venezuela with Colombia, they're handling the Venezuelans are handling the situation much, much better than their neighbors in Colombia or in Brazil or even in Argentina.
Right.
So Venezuela, a country that's been subject to, what is it now, 5-6 years, getting on for 7 years of very severe economic sanctions, outright theft of many billions of dollars of its wealth, its oil wealth, its resource, the Citgo resources in of Venezuela's state oil company PDVSA that operate in the United States. It's gold bullion that was stolen by the Bank of England a couple of years ago, something of the order of $1.5 billion. Huge amounts of money that the European banking system have sequestered, well over $1 billion. But despite all that aggression, Venezuela is still doing much better than its neighbor Colombia, which is supposed to be a model. The United States holds Colombia as a model for the region. The
Venezuela has 91 cases so far reported and no deaths.
Right. And so you have a similar situation in here in Nicaragua, where the only cases that have appeared are people that got the disease outside the country. And they've been under observation and receiving care for around a week. There have been no cases of local contamination, and then there are reasons for that. But Nicaragua has done the very opposite of El Salvador. El Salvador very, very quickly imposed quarantine, practically shutting down the country. And you have to remember that in countries like Central America, and even more people than in the United States, depend on an informal income. All those people in the United States that depend on tips and other informal income, who are suffering as a result of the measures being imposed, apparently in a very uneven way from one state to another, but they're suffering hugely as a result of a drastic drop in income.
Right.
And you can't do that here in Nicaragua. You can't just shine. That's what President Bukele did in El Salvador. He's basically shut down the economy. And in Nicaragua, they've taken the decision. They haven't chosen a suppression model. They've chosen a mitigation and monitoring model.
Right.
And so far, that model has done very well. That might change. We don't know. But at the moment, the policy choices taken by the Nicaraguan government have proved superior in terms of the well-being, the overall well-being of the population than those taken by the President Bukele in El Salvador, or the decisions taken by Juan Orlando Hernandez in Honduras.
Yeah, you know, of course, right? As you know, I mean, you do public health work, so when you have different circumstances present in different places, different populations, different geographic areas, if there are no cases, then you want to preserve that condition, and you're not so interested in building up your capacity to treat the disease, but rather prevention. You're working on trying to be 100% or as close to that as you can. Looking around the world right now, I mean, you have Venezuela with 91 and Cuba with 57 cases, for example, and you can see how well they do with those thus far in terms of outcomes. Again, no one dead yet in Venezuela, one person in Cuba. You have only two cases in Nicaragua, and also that's the same as in Belize, you have one. Grenada, you have one. Libya, you have one. And so in those places, it'd be following the same strategy. Other places, though, I mean, if let's say someone decided, and this was something Guterres and sort of accidentally touched on this, he was selling something else, but, you know, if you look around the world right now, all the different conflicts that are going on, if you really want to cause some damage somewhere, all you have to do is send in some sick people to places like Libya where there's been no contamination yet, but there really has no infrastructure to deal with it once it presents. In Nicaragua, right, they're preparing, and they'll, you know, if this starts to swell among the population, they'll be able to handle it. In Libya, they won't be able to handle it. In Colombia, well, now we're talking about getting assistance to some of these places from Cuba. We'll see what happens. But, you know, different places where there's no infrastructure and or, you know, no really nothing, not even a political infrastructure to take care of people when they're sick. This could eat right through whole populations.
Yeah, and in terms of people that contract the disease, and who knows what the number of deaths might be. But, and the thing is that, and here in Nicaragua, and they've taken, in, just so our listeners understand what the Nicaraguan authorities have done, and they, and just last weekend, for example, they mobilized tens of thousands of volunteers, and in addition to their health professionals throughout the country, and they visited something like 453,000 households.
Wow!
Just over the weekend. So yeah, and what were they doing? They were imparting education. They were monitoring for possible cases. They were telling people to be alert, and if any members of their family show a set of symptoms that indicate a possible contamination by the virus, to go straight to their health center and get the test. Nicaragua has a national laboratory that's approved by the World Health Organization to do these kinds of tests, and they can get the result back in under 6 hours. So for a small population like Nicaragua, and that's probably good enough to be able to keep control of the number of people who are testing positive or not. Currently, they're following a total of 9 cases that are suspected to have might have the virus, and they've done the tests on them, and so far the tests have come back negative. So, you know, I mean, that's good news, but that gives you an idea. And there's massive health education work going on all the time in practically all the media, insisting mainly on two things: the importance of washing your hands when you go out somewhere. The first thing you do when you get back home is wash your hands. If you change location from one place to another, wash your hands. Under normal, like washing your hands after using the bathroom and so on. And then the other important thing that they're telling people to do is to cough or sneeze with great care, so that if you don't have a handkerchief or something to sneeze into the crook of your elbow, and in particular sneeze downwards, because the coronavirus is a very heavy virus. It can't survive more than about a meter or 4 feet, even if somebody were to spit it out, you know, in order to cough it out without trying to protect their mouth, cover their mouth. Right. It can't go more than about 4 feet and drops to the floor.
Oh.
So, you know, and so that social distancing thing that people are insisting on, that's quite sensible, so that if you're talking to people, you should maintain a distance of at least 1.5 meters, right? And so all these sensible measures, these basic measures, are communicated to the population all the time. And have been for the last month. And so you've got this constant education. Periodically, you'll have these mass mobilizations, because at the same time as this coronavirus outbreak is happening, there's also this is the time of year when Nicaragua does its mass vaccination campaigns, for children, which have been incredibly successful in reducing the kinds of diseases that, you know, all those viral things that children suffer from in other parts of the world are virtually unknown in Nicaragua because of Nicaragua's incredible vaccination program. So that's happening at the same time, and that's also an opportunity to do education about not just the coronavirus, but also dengue has been particularly prevalent this year. And so there's a lot of education about dengue as well. So, and Nicaragua is very vulnerable not just to the things like the coronavirus, but also to outbreaks of disease like dengue, which most people who follow events in Latin America are well aware that dengue has become a mass menace across the whole region, in terms of threats to public health.
And you had Zika virus, was that last year or the year before, that made the rounds down there in the last few years?
Malaria
is the big thing.
There's very little malaria in Nicaragua. I mean, it's limited very much to the far northeast of the country, and there's a strong campaign against it right now, too. So, Nicaragua is the beneficiary of an extremely efficient preventive health infrastructure and procedures and mass mobilizations that other countries tend not to have.
And then the
other aspect that has been very encouraging for people here has been the coordination with Cuba, and it has to be said, the coordination with Taiwan, because of the influence of the People's Republic of China, Taiwan tends to get written out of World Health Organization reports. And if you look at World Health Organization reports, you probably won't, you'll have difficulty finding any information about Taiwan. That's because the People's Republic of China insists that Taiwan is part of China and shouldn't be treated as a separate entity. Well, that's a whole separate thing. But from the point of view of the specific experience of Nicaragua, and Nicaragua has benefited hugely from the positive, successful experience of Taiwan in controlling the virus. And at the same time, it's benefited hugely from the experience of the Cuban medical advisors that have been assisting here. And something that's interesting, we have mentioned this in the past, is that Russia has assisted Nicaragua to set up a plant to produce vaccine. It's the only plant in Central America that is capable of producing world-class WHO-approved vaccines. Now, a Cuban team came here last week and worked with the Russian advisors and the Nicaraguan health authorities to look at the plant and determine whether it's capable of producing the interferon alpha 2. I've forgotten what the full name of that antiviral drug is, but interferon to keep it short. And they expect to be able to produce interferon if necessary here in Nicaragua, which would be a huge boost for the region too.
Sure.
So that gives you, and nothing like that is happening anywhere else in the region. It's not happening in Panama. It's not happening in, just not happening in the rest of the region. So why is it happening in Nicaragua? And I think this is a point that we really must insist on. The thing is that progressive, socialist-inspired governments like the Nicaraguan government, the Venezuelan government, the revolutionary government of Cuba, they focus on the human person. They do not focus on corporate profit. But almost everywhere else in the region has been taken over by the ideology that only free market capitalism is a viable system, and every other system has to be dismantled and not even spoken about.
I mean, they contradict it with these huge actions that they're taking. They're about 5 seconds away from issuing the checks, so far $2 trillion to subsidize people's salaries, their wages, and to help subsidize their real estate, costs for people, their housing costs, other costs, all kinds of money being pumped into every kind of business, Wall Street, Main Street, hot dog stand on the corner. This is it. If you were to just look at the series of actions that are going to be taken, you would think that we just got out of a meeting of the Supreme Soviet in like 1918 or something, and this was that we're now taking charge of the economy in Russia, and yet this is the same group of people that, to them, the biggest danger to everyone's health is socialism. And yet it's the only device they can manage to use, no matter what they call it, to save their own behinds.
Yeah, something that's interesting to people here is the way, and there are lots of people who are very skeptical about the response in different countries. And one of the things that people are puzzled about in the United States is what looks like a decision by the Treasury to hand over its powers, and by Congress, to hand over in the U.S., to hand over their powers to the Federal Reserve about how to bail the economy out. The Federal Reserve, instead of just working via strictly financial mechanisms, will actually be bailing out corporations directly.
Right.
And is that the case?
I think that suggestion cedes too much power to locations other than the Federal Reserve that don't exist. The Fed has the great discretion already, and has historically. It was created essentially to put that kind of power into private hands that should belong in the hands of a government.
Right.
And so, you know, there's so many things to contemplate in the with what's happening in the United States and around the world. But looking just at the United States, for example, and these are things you might want to think about looking around locally. What's happening, first of all, is unprecedented in a number of ways in terms of the scope of money that's going to be applied to this, unprecedented in American history. In terms of the complete and total shutdown of social, political, you know, almost every form of human interaction, unprecedented. People are, you know, literally stuck in their houses. In some places, they're not allowed to leave. You're not allowed to cross some state lines, for example, New York and Pennsylvania. There are all the restaurants. The restaurants in the whole area, in the whole country pretty much, are all closed down. Yes. The bars, social gathering places, all of this just done by fiat. And I'm only scratching the surface. The schools are closed. They're going to be done by, you know, over the phone, you know, over Skype or whatever. If they come back in a month or two, the wherewithal for changing practice of our, you know, our former human culture, basically, to something quite new, quite more alienated, you know, as a product of this, is very high. There are all kinds of things that are being implemented that may not get unimplemented. The restaurants, for example, are not going to come back. A lot of them are just going to die.
Right. Yeah, and one of the things that they're likely to bring in is an end to cash.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, what gets me, though? Here's the thing. If they let's say the United States ends up suffering, I don't know, 5,000 deaths from this, or 10,000 deaths. And let's say that they say, you know, it's a good thing we did that because we saved 20,000 more. That's our estimate. And so they spend $5 trillion saving 20,000 lives from this scourge, okay? Next year, I mean, already this flu season, they say we probably lost 30,000 people just to the regular flu. We lose thousands and thousands to homelessness every year, to lack of medical care, to wars all over the world. So if you can temporarily socialize the economy in order to save on an emergency basis these 10 or 15 or 20,000 people, how is it that you let that same economy grind another 200,000 or 300,000 or 500,000 or 1 million a year into death, without taking larger strides to socialize the economy and solve the problem?
Right. No, and I think that's obviously an extremely valid question. One of the puzzling things for us here in Nicaragua is that life here is pretty normal. We go out to the supermarket. There's been some attempt at hoarding by people, so a few products are in short supply, not many. But generally speaking, life is normal. The schools haven't closed down. Public transport hasn't closed down. Restaurants haven't closed down. Public life goes on as normal. You know? And so what's happening is that a lot of people voluntarily, principally middle class people who can afford it, are kind of self-isolating. But in general, because the 70% of the economy depends on small and micro businesses, and that it's just impossible. It would be absolutely impossible to shut down Nicaragua without causing mass starvation.
Right.
In the way that the United States has been shut down.
Right.
So, one of the things that I commented on, I don't know if I mentioned this earlier to you or in another conversation, is it'll be interesting to be able to compare what happens in El Salvador with what happens in Nicaragua, because the two models of dealing with the pandemic are diametrically opposed. And the other thing, I know, I don't know if we've got time to carry on talking, but one of the things that it does strike me very much as the case is that something that we touched on last week in our last conversation, namely that under cover of the virus, as you touched on this theme in your remarks just now, under cover of the virus, the various governments, mostly right-wing governments, exclusively right-wing governments, in fact, are introducing measures that probably have very little to do with the pandemic. For example, as we expected, the Bolivian authorities have cancelled the elections due in May.
Right.
And so, you know, and that may or may not be a fair decision. But and for example, in Russia, President Putin has just announced that they're going to postpone the vote on the constitutional changes. A similar thing has happened in Chile. The constitutional referendum has been postponed for the duration. There's still no result from the elections in Guyana. The very fiercely contested municipal elections in the Dominican Republic, and I think there's still some uncertainty about the result there also. So in Ecuador, as I think we did mention last week, Lenin Moreno, the kind of right wing president there, has introduced by stealth practically the same austerity measures that he was unable to impose just a few months ago when the protest took place against it. And under cover of the virus, they've been able to introduce that. And Argentina and Mexico are also two quite contrasting cases.
Yeah.
Because in Mexico, President López Obrador has, while they've been making very serious preparations to deal with a potentially much greater outbreak of the virus, he's insisting, very much like the authorities here in Nicaragua, that people try and go around their life normally, just take sensible precautions and follow the basic rules about not contaminating people by coughing and sneezing properly, and also by the constant washing of hands. Mexico has been very good at implementing that kind of education campaign. And in Argentina, which is a similarly progressive kind of government to the government of Andrés Manuel López Obrador in Mexico, the government there of Alberto Fernández has opted for quite an extreme suppression model, shutting down the country.
And we're going to have to see how that turns out with further conversation on this next week, because we are out of time, as happens. So again, thank you, Tony, for your report. And we'll see you next week sometime.
I hope you stay safe, Don, and we'll try and do the same here. Look forward to talking to you next time.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.